The Financial Survival Network, helping you survive and thrive in the new economy. Go to carrielutz.com and sign up for 30 free micro trainings on financial survival.
1490 WGCH, this is Carrie Lutz, and you're listening to the Financial Survival Network.
So if you're wondering whether or not mining stocks are for you, if you've watched the carnage that's happened in those markets in the past few weeks, two people I have on for a roundtable are going to be able to shed a lot of light on what's happened and where these stocks are going. I've got Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist, and I've got Ron Hera from HeraResearch.com. Guys, welcome to the Financial Survival Network. It's really great to do this roundtable with you.
Thanks a lot.
How are you doing, Carrie?
Doing okay. So let's get down to it, because I know that people are very uncertain about these mining stocks, and you hear a lot of things about what's going on with them. Mickey, what's your take on the stocks? How do professionals make money in investing in resource exploration? And what's your power of two formula? Tell us about that.
Well, people make money by buying these stocks when they are beaten down, unloved, unknown, and undervalued. The retail investor often makes the mistake of going in at the top of the market. As a contrarian, I try to buy at the bottom of the market. What we've seen lately, and this is very common, is a post-PDAC sell-off. And that makes a lot of sense, because most financings are done in the fourth quarter of the year into the early first quarter of the following year. So with a four-month hold on private placement stocks, this becomes a selling season, especially amongst professional investors. And that's what I see happening at this juncture.
And Ron, what about you? What's your feeling on the pitfalls of resource investing?
Well, like Mickey, I look to buy things when they're on sale. Obviously, I want to buy low and sell high. That's clearly how anyone makes money in the stock market. But I take a little bit different approach. I'm basically a value investor. I try not to speculate on exploration, which is a category I call extreme risk. And instead, I focus on companies that have a discovery, or at least it looks like they're going to have a compelling data supporting that they will have a discovery there, or that have a resource. And I even focus on production track companies, where I play a lot of pre-production to production situations. So I break down companies into categories based on what I call their life cycle. So from exploration to pre-production, because I focus on the production track companies, to a junior producer, a mid-tier producer, and then, of course, major producers. So it's that sort of lifestyle cycle approach, and there's an opportunity to make money at each transition between life cycle stages. And even within that, we monitor the milestones of the businesses. We want to understand their specific plan, because we're looking for companies that are going to be successful as a business. As value investors, we're looking for companies that will be successful businesses. So we monitor aggressively what their plan is and their progress against that plan as they progress from one life cycle stage to the next. So as far as the current market situation, we've had a huge sell-off, especially just in the last couple days. In addition to what Mickey said about the selling season, we've had the dollar strengthen against the euro, and that's caused the stock markets to dip in the U.S., and also the price of gold has gone down. So as the precious metals fall, we'll see an exaggerated or magnified sell-off in the stocks. So we're at a great point right now in terms of a buying opportunity, and there's some real bargains out there.
Yeah, so you see a lot of bargains out there, Mickey?
Probably not as many as Ron sees right now, because I'm not convinced we're at the bottom. But his points are well taken, and we have somewhat divergent views about how the business works and what we choose. But like Ron, I tend to pick advanced explorers, and but not with the idea that they will necessarily execute a business plan of mining and become profitable miners. I think mining is a very difficult business. But the idea of picking companies that are more advanced with a resource estimate and at least one or two decision points in the future that look like they have strong possibilities of success at those decision points is a very viable strategy. I generally don't stick with companies until they become miners or profitable miners, and that's where I didn't quite answer the second part of your question. What's the power of two philosophy? And that's basically that you take all your money off the table when a stock doubles. So by doing that, and then you still have half your position to play around with, and that's pure profit, we can take the inherent extreme risk out of this market, assuming we pick stocks when they are unloved, unknown, and undervalued, because nearly every junior will have a double in any running 52-week period from its high to its low.
And personally, I have to say, the way I've managed to make money, I've made money in the market, but the way I've managed to keep money is when I do sell off half of a stock after it's doubled. That is an old maximum, on Wall Street, which is you never lose money by taking a profit. But Ron, do you think that the efficient market theory that mining stocks are fairly valued at any given time, does that kind of break down when you're dealing with the resource sector, especially the juniors?
Well, yeah, definitely. The efficient markets hypothesis, or EMH, it doesn't really apply to these companies, especially before they have any cash flow. So the EMH is generally true for companies that conform to ordinary securities analysis when they have cash flow and when they have an established growth trend. So when you have a company that is exploring for resources, that's a completely different story. When you have a company that has a resource on the table or a discovery on the table and then has the potential to increase that resource through further exploration, potentially doubling or more, increasing that resource, that is not really amenable to the efficient markets hypothesis. But, of course, it's also inherently more risky. Now, I did want to comment that I actually also usually sell half the shares if I get a double on the stock price. Not always, but I haven't been able to really beat the rule of thumb. So I think that's a good rule, to sell half your shares if you have 100% gain. And I do often do that, but not always, as I said.
Right.
And although that is my power of two philosophy, I don't do that always, as I say. And sometimes that works to my benefit, and sometimes it ends up biting me in the butt, to use an expression. It comes down to individual stocks and what an intelligent investor sees as a future upside. And these juniors operate in cycles. It is fairly easy to predict some, if you do very good due diligence, when and what the next decision point or catalyst will be. The idea that Ron referred to this at specific, there are specific entrance and exit points within his life cycle approach to these, and that's very well taken. That in especially a volatile market, you will see multiple entry and exit points on these stocks. And this is perhaps where Ron and I differ a bunch, let me say, would be I am not a buy and hold guy in this sector with very few exceptions. I think that these stocks are made to be bought and sold. And so from that point of view, I am perhaps more of a trader than Ron is. Is that fair, Ron?
I think that depends partly on what life cycle stage you're focused on. So certainly on the exploration side, I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. When you get into the more advanced companies, I tend to buy things with an 18 to 24 month horizon. And sometimes it ends up being longer. So, for example, we bought First Majestic at around $3, and it's like about $19 or $20 today. So we never sold that stock. We did sell some shares in order to invest in other things, but we didn't follow the rule of selling half the shares when we got a double on the price. If we had done that, we would have sold it at $6.
Yeah, but you still, from my point of view, you would still own half your shares to ride to the $20 mark. And personally, I would be taking money off the table at specific sale prices at that point.
Well, I think that makes sense, actually, and the reason is that I agree with you that mining is a terrible business. A mining company is actually liquidating its assets are in liquidation from the moment it goes into production. But that's also why we look for companies that have what we call a growth story, where we wouldn't necessarily see this sort of liquidation phase once they go into production. What we would expect is that they'd have a project pipeline with multiple other projects, or where that particular project is going to increase its resource base or its production over time. So we're looking for growth stories, and specifically we're looking for what I call monster growth stories, where there's a huge pipeline or a huge upside potential in terms of exploration and production.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of going towards the same goal with slightly different strategies involved, but sounds like when you find the right company, you kind of refrain from selling off half, but I guess you're pretty wary once it doubles. So if there's a pullback, you're probably going to sell off half at that point, very likely, right? Ron?
Well, from our view, it just has to do with the particulars of that company. So, and it has to do with what else we want to invest in. It might surprise you to learn that we evaluate a lot of companies, and usually on a month-by-month basis, we literally only find two or three companies that are even worth evaluating as potential investments. And the majority of those we don't invest in. So we filter the companies through a multi-phase filter, so to speak, to get down to those tiny handful of companies where we actually believe it's worth investing in the business. And we're taking a value investment approach. So we're thinking of it as being business owners, as a shareholder in that company. So it is there's very few companies that actually meet all of our criteria. And once we find one of those companies, if it's doing well, like a First Majestic Silver, for example, we're not necessarily going to sell those shares unless we want to buy something else with that cash.
Right. So, Mickey, what do you think of the universe of stocks out there? How many of them are really good investments at any given time?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll just give you an example of my current portfolio. I hold right now about 35 stocks, and at last count, there's somewhere around 1,800 Toronto or Toronto Venture listed juniors. So do the math on that. What is that? Quickly, that's about
2%.
And I probably have another 20 or so on a watch list, but I only cover 9 stocks, so I cover 9 of 1,800, which is 0.5%. And the ones I cover are the ones that I go public with in my writing. Those are the ones that sponsor my website, and those are the ones that I am convinced can double in 12 months or less. So Ron's point, again, is very well taken. There are many pretenders out there. Something on the order of 95% of these companies will ultimately fail. So the goal of what we all try to do is separate the many pretenders from the very few contenders. My power of two philosophy, which we've discussed a bit, the corollary to that is I set open orders to sell, both on the uptick and downtick. So, for example, even though we are in a bearish market over the last couple of months, since probably you could argue since the beginning of February, so what is that, 7 weeks now, I have executed many open orders to sell in the interim. I sold a gold stock today on the uptick that at $1.49, and that open order to sell has been in probably for 3 months now. I also took some money off the table on a penny stock at 27 cents yesterday. So all I do is I get emails from my brokers that say, fills, and you filled this order today. And so by doing that, it takes the emotion out of trading, and I think that's a real key to success, not only in the junior resource sector, but in any stock market trades. You want to do it from a very well-reasoned outlook and never trade on emotion.
Definitely sound advice, because every time I've done that, I've gotten slammed without fail. So if there's one thing that you would advise investors, each of you, and first Ron, what would it be? What's the most important thing when you're dabbling in these juniors?
Well, we have a very similar approach to buying and selling, except that in our case, it's not strictly price-driven. We'll do most of our selling on the way down because we're looking to move cash into things that are going to rise faster after you have a sell-off. So it's a little bit different approach there, but basically, we have a no-long-shots rule, which is how we filter the stocks coming in, and then we have a no-excuses rule, so to speak, for companies that we sell. So again, we're looking at the progress of the business as it moves along through its life cycle stages, and if it's not meeting its actual milestones, then we're going to sell the stock typically. Sometimes that'll be at a profit, but we just have lost confidence in the company.
All right, and what about you, Mickey? What's your one big rule that you never ever go against?
Do your own due diligence. I think it's very important to do thorough research in any of these stocks. This is gambling. We like to refer to these things as mining stocks, but barely one of 100 is a miner. They're exploration stocks for the most part. It's very high risk. It's probably the highest risk stock market venture anybody will make. But it's like going to the casino. You don't go to the casino and play roulette, because that there is nothing more than luck involved in roulette. You might go to the casino and play blackjack, because if you're a good blackjack player, you can skew the odds in your favor, or even a good poker player.
Poker, for sure.
Yeah, and I am a good poker player, which we've discussed before. So by doing your own research, you can skew the gambling odds in your favor, and that is the most important thing that any retail lay investor can ever do.
Hey, that's a great point. I want to thank both of you for being with us. Ron, where can you be found? Where's your site?
HeraResearch.com, HeraResearch.com.
Okay, and Mickey, how about you? Where do we find you?
MercenaryGeologist.com and MercenaryGeologist.Asia.
All right, and if you need to contact either one of them or you have questions, you can always write me, Kerry Lutz, KL@KerryLutz.com. And thanks, guys.
Thank you, Kerry. Thank you, Ron.
Thanks for having me on.